14. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. After she left the Skire, Phasma never looked back. Her warriors had always considered her their true leader, and their real loyalties were no longer hidden. No one spoke of Keldo or the rest of the Skire or the Claws. No one spoke of regret. They were silent as they traversed the rock spires that made the Skire land so treacherous. While Gosta scouted ahead, Torben helped Brendel again, and Phasma, Carr, and Siv helped the troopers. Despite the inescapable noises made by anchoring their claws and leaping from rock to rock, no one from the tribe stirred as they left, not even the sentries. When they reached the borderlands, the last Skire sentry was asleep in his hammock. Later, secretly and out of earshot of Phasma, her warriors discussed this peculiarity, and it was mentioned that perhaps their leader had slipped something into that night's stew to aid the group's leave-taking. Phasma had served her people personally, and they had considered it an honor. Her warriors and the First Order folk had, of course, been served first. After leaving the snoring sentry behind, they couldn't help considering that perhaps Phasma's gesture of goodwill had been less an honor and more an insurance policy. Not that they had a word for that in the Skire. Still, they knew that something was up, and it was chilling, seeing this new side of Phasma. Siv was undergoing her own personal crisis at the time. As the keeper of the Detraxers, she had been raised to understand that her duty was to keep her people alive and healthy by withdrawing the essence of their dead members and crafting the Oracle Salve for those left behind. Leaving with Phasma and taking both Detraxers meant that she was abandoning, betraying, and possibly dooming the majority of her band. She felt it keenly. But she had made her choice, and so she continued without complaint. Phasma was the key to a brighter future, she hoped, for all the Skire. They would one day bring the riches of the First Order to their people, and then they would no longer need the salve. Rather than going directly through the borderlands and into Baldur's territory, where Claw sentries might raise an alarm, Phasma angled east. Her warriors followed without question, but it was considered a bold move. The Skire knew little about this region, only that the rocks rose highest near the sea, and that there was very little to scavenge there. If the land had been ripe or welcoming, Baldur would have worked to extend his territory. But there seemed to be a pall over the area, as if there was a reason no one wished to go there. The borderlands didn't end so much as the Skire and the Claws independently came to the conclusion that the land wasn't worth fighting for. Just before dawn, Phasma called her group close on an outcropping that afforded enough room for everyone to sit or perch relatively close. Very little was visible by starlight, and they had no fire. Only the flashing bits of metal on Brendel's black uniform and the gleam of stormtrooper armor shone in the darkness. "We can't go directly through Clawland," Phasma said, immediately addressing the question on everyone's mind. "We don't know how hungry his people are for blood. If they're smart, they'll send a contingent out into the sands toward Brendel's ship, while leaving a defensive force to maintain their territory and harvest the bodies."
"Harvest the bodies?"
Brendel asked, half disgusted and half curious. "Siv, explain." Siv reached into her pack and pulled out a Detraxer. "As you know, our planet is sick. The sun is too harsh. The rain burns our skin. And we can't get all the nutrients we need from our food, which leads to disease, brittle bones, and loose teeth. When someone dies, we use the Detraxers to reclaim what minerals and liquids we can, and I craft those nutrients into a bomb we call Oracle Salve. Every member of the band receives an allotment. Spreading it on the skin ensures we remain as healthy as we can be, protected from the elements. The Claw people use them as well."
"It's inelegant, but necessary," Phasma said, her voice harsh and brooking no refusal.
"I see,"
Brendel said, always diplomatic.
"And how did you come to possess this machine?"
"It's been passed down since the cities died. They once used them on food animals. My mother taught me how to care for them."
Siv stroked the worn leather lovingly.
and I've made some improvements. My mother's oracle salve smelled like rancid fish, but mine at least smells...
like fresher fish,
Carr broke in, and Siv elbowed him with a grin.
It's barbaric,
Brendel noted. Siv bristled. No, it's holy. It's how to keep your people strong even as you leave them. Body to body, dust to dust. Death is inevitable, but it means the rest of the tribe will be stronger, Phasma said. She looked around the circle, gazing into each person's eyes as the sun came up and giving a long look to each stormtrooper, their faces, as always, hidden behind their helmets. Learn to respect both ends of this machine if you wish to survive your time on Parnassos.
Do you not have such problems among your people?
Gosta asked. The girl was in awe of Brendel and his troops, just as she was in awe of Phasma and her warriors. Brendel's smile was kinder when he spoke to the girl.
No, child, we do not. We benefit from the greatest advances in technology and medicine. We simply add the vital nutrients to our food so that we stay strong.
But where do you get them from, then?
We buy them from merchants.
But where do the merchants get them?
Brendel wasn't smiling now.
These foolish questions waste valuable time. The wonderful thing about civilization is that you buy what you need, thereby supporting merchants and artisans. Where the sellers source their goods is not my problem. But I assure you that they do not come from humans. Such things are generally frowned upon in more civilized parts of the galaxy.
Gosta looked crushed, but Phasma spoke next. I look forward to benefiting from such civilization. But until that time, we will use all available resources to get us off this planet. There is no shame in using every advantage to staying alive. Brendel seemed surprised when one of the stormtroopers spoke next, his voice strange and somewhat amplified by his helmet.
We had something similar on Automach, but for beasts. It's similar to a moisture detractor.
Phasma's warriors couldn't miss Brendel's sneer as he turned to look at the trooper and noticeably glanced down at his number.
Perhaps you forget, PT-2445, that I have visited Automach several times, as well as planets with even harsher conditions. And when on those planets, I still hold my rank.
Yes, General Hux. Sorry, sir.
Brendel nodded. But there was a chill among the group now. On Parnassos, with everyone fighting to survive, such formalities were saved for rare instances of ritual or leadership, like Keldo's pronouncement from his throne in the Nautilus. During regular moments, everyone was considered equal. Apparently, that was not how things were done in the First Order. The stormtrooper did not speak again. As for Phasma, she was already looking beyond the group to the hard line of the horizon. Siv knew her leader had carefully noted where Brendel's ship had landed and where the smoke had risen, and although they didn't know the lay of the land between here and there, they all expected trouble.
No matter which direction we go, we're headed into land we've never seen before. Eat and drink, apply your salve, and then prepare your rope lines. It's a long way down the other side of these mountains.
How do you know?
Gosta asked. Phasma gave her a long stare.
We know there's flat land beyond these rocks, because we've seen what's on the other side of Baldur's territory. It stands to reason that land would stretch to these rocks. Does anyone disagree?
No one dared. Not even Brendel.
It will be, I think, several days to the fallen ship, even without major impediments. We may encounter animals and people. Or we may simply face harsh conditions, unlike those of our own land. General Hux, can you tell us what you saw of the terrain between your ship being shot down and your journey to Baldur's Plateau?
Brendel considered.
We used the escape pods shortly after being hit. Each pod fits 6 people and we had 11 bodies, so we had 2 pods. 2 pilots in the cockpit were already dead, so our pod only held the 4 of us and the droid. We haven't seen the other pod, nor have we been able to communicate with the others through our comm system. There's no telling if the other five troopers made it. We were unable to see what happened to the ship, but when we exited the pod, the smoke was quite far away. At least the smoke suggests it didn't land in the ocean, which would make it irretrievable. The land we saw was all sand, just endless sand. We walked for the plateau because we could see smoke, which meant people. We did not expect to be greeted by a murderous Doug and claimed as spoils. The look on his face suggested that he would have very much liked to have been the one who stabbed Balder.
I've never walked on sand,
Torben noted.
What's it like?
Phasma's people looked to her, but she nodded to Brendel. It shifts under your feet. Coarse and rough, irritating, gets everywhere, slips into your clothes and boots. But you passed no animals or people on your way to Baldur's Land, Phasma pressed. Brendel shook his head.
No one and nothing. We feared we were on an entirely uninhabited planet, although we did see several factory complexes and uninhabited cities from the sky.
How far away?
In my ship? Mere hours.
By foot, several days, most likely. It's hard to make accurate navigational estimates while plummeting to one's death. He sighed and went a bit wistful.
It's a shame we landed here where the terrain is so unforgiving. Across the ocean, there is a larger continent, lush and green. As you told your brother, if we are able to reach my ship, perhaps your people can be moved there to give them a better chance of reclaiming what once was. Perhaps there are survivors there. A civilization.
Perhaps, Phasma said. But we know for a fact there is a better life among your stars.
May I speak with you privately?
Brendel asked. Phasma's warriors had always understood that they lived under two rulers, with Phasma acting as the muscle and Keldo as the brains and spirit. It was easy enough to accept that Brendel would now be one of their leaders, and it made sense to them at the time that Brendel might wish to talk to Phasma alone. The pair disappeared around a cluster of larger stones, their whispers obscured. Now, when people grow up in small bands in rough lands, they become accustomed to never having privacy, and to giving those who seek seclusion what little space they can. The warriors turned their backs to Phasma and Brendel and began talking among themselves, gabbling about their hopes for a new home, whether it be on a nearby continent made of solid ground or up in the stars wearing white armor. The three troopers stood outside this circle looking very out of place.
Do you like it?
Gosta asked one of the stormtroopers, pointing at the starry sky.
Up there?
The man considered her and seemed like he was about to answer, but PT-2445 interrupted them.
We shouldn't be talking,
he said.
Not without the General's permission. We are not at ease.
With his helmet on, it was impossible to guess what the silenced trooper might be feeling. Still, he must have agreed with his compatriot as he did not answer the question and instead turned away, hand on his blaster. Phasma's warriors traded looks. Would a good leader prevent his soldiers from speaking their minds? Did these warriors give up their own power, their own personalities, so easily? It was a new way of doing things, and one that didn't sit well with the free folk of the Skyre. The sun was coming up as Phasma and Brendel returned from their private conversation. Phasma must have used part of their time to prepare the other leader for the next step of their journey, as Brendel now wore Skyre gloves with climbing claws and had a pair of spikes tied tightly around his shining black boots. He was an awkward man, as you know, mostly belly and sneer, and he stumbled as he walked and grew accustomed to the new tools. Phasma reached into one of her packs and tossed out three more pairs of gloves and boot spikes, all stolen from the Nautilus, which her warriors quickly helped the troopers strap on. They were almost ready to go, and Phasma looked to Siv, who held out the pot of Oracle salve. It was a dense, greenish-black, and Phasma dipped in two fingers and drew dark lines under her eyes. Siv held out the pot to each of the Skyre members who did the same. When she held it out to Brendel, he shook his head in disgust.
We can survive a few days before resorting to such indelicacies,
he said.
Suit yourself, Phasma said, pulling on her mask. Let's go. Again, her warriors traded glances. They were accustomed to knowing Phasma's secret plans, even when Keldo didn't. But this time, she revealed nothing. They too put on their masks. If they were to die on the mountain, they would die fierce. The mountain itself represented a new kind of challenge. The Skyre folk had to use all their tools and tricks to navigate the perilous ledges of the jagged tower of rock. It was hundreds of meters to the sandy ground below, and they had to edge around the sheer cliff face using only their boot spikes and hand claws, all while roped to one another, the impossibly maladroit Brendel, and the clumsy troopers. With every slip of a foot or breaking bit of rock, the entire group clung to the mountain, bracing themselves to absorb the weight of a falling body. Phasma and Torben kept Brendel between them, showing him where to plant his spikes and keeping him close so he couldn't drag them down. Each step took them around the mountain and down just the smallest bit. The wind whistled past, and curious seabirds rode the air, watching and hoping for the signs of an imminent feast of crushed human down below. Now anyone canny and strong enough to grow to adulthood in the Skyre knew that a smart climber never looked down. But everyone later admitted to looking down anyway. It wasn't often they had the chance to see something totally new for the first time. On the side of the mountain they'd come from, the dark and familiar ocean endlessly bit at the rock. But on the far side, the mountain began as a straight face, then gradually began to slope down to yet another dark sea. Endless gray sand. When the morning sun struck the valley below, it sparkled in vibrant reds and oranges, a beautiful sight promising the rare chance to walk without fear of tumbling to one's death. Siv confessed that this sight was so unexpected and arresting she nearly let go of the mountain. If she had, I suspect we wouldn't be here talking right now. When everyone is distracted and one person falters, there tends to be a grand tragedy, does there not? Step by step, they edged around the mountain, ever closer to the sandy ground. The sun reached its zenith and the air began to warm. The Skyre folk began to twitch and shake their heads, sweating under their masks. They'd never felt this kind of heat before. Although the sun was harsh back home, they were always cold, thanks to the ocean's chill, the cutting winds, and the shade from taller rocks. But now, sweat began to trickle into their eyes and down their backs. Taking off their masks wasn't an option. The wind swept sand into every pore, while the sun beat down with more than its usual punishment. Poor Brendel was the only one without any face protection, and nothing could be done for him until they were on the ground and able to access their packs. Every finger and toe was lodged into a crevice in the rock. He was soon traversing the mountain with his eyes squeezed shut, gloves and boot tips probing blindly for cracks, his cheeks red and his lips already blistering. The troopers were surprisingly tenacious for all that their armor made them bulky. Siv noted that whatever training they'd had was well done. The three troopers were physically fit, strong, and able to quickly master the art of climbing. No one complained, not even Brendel, who was clearly having problems. Even Phasma's warriors suffered, as their usual terrain involved leaping and rappelling from spire to spire, not clinging to a rock face for hours on end. Their arms began to ache and burn, their curled toes going numb in their boots. Each time someone found a ledge, they took turns standing there for just a moment, swinging their arms and bending their knees, urging feeling back into their bones. If not for those small moments of mercy, someone would have made a misstep. But by some miracle, no one did. Phasma's boots were the first to hit sand sometime after noon. She gave a cry of triumph that drew every eye. For the first time in living history, a Skyre stood on the actual planet. Not high above on a rock, not in a cave, but on solid enough ground with nowhere to fall. Next, Brendel hopped down, and Phasma had to help catch and steady him. When Torben jumped down, the sand puffed around him like gray smoke, and he laughed his booming laugh, making Siv smile. One by one, the warriors and troopers landed on the sand. The Skyr folk couldn't help flipping back their masks to look down and marvel at the feel of actual land beneath their feet, and they undid their ropes and knelt or sat in the sand, amazed at the sensation. For all of their lives until that moment, they'd been aware that they were high above the land, and that falling from such great heights meant death. Here, there was nowhere to fall. Siv had never felt so safe, for all that they were in entirely new territory. She learned later that the sand was half mineral and half volcanic ash, which accounted for its feathery softness and tendency to billow up and irritate eyes and mucous membranes. As for Carr, he removed a glove and ran sand through his fingers, laughing. His laughter stopped abruptly.
Ouch!
Phasma leapt to his side. What's wrong? Carr held up a hand to show a raised red bump.
Something bit me, I think. There it is.
He pointed to a tiny, shiny creature burrowing swiftly back into the gray sand, and Phasma dug for it and pinned it between two fingers of her glove. It was a beetle with a gold carapace, horns, and a sharply pointed proboscis. Held in the sun, it glittered gold and green with an entire iridescent rainbow in between. Of course, I can describe it to you because I've been to Parnassus and studied one, but none of Phasma's people had ever seen anything like it before.
It's pretty, Gosta said.
Phasma held it up to the light, and a single drop of blood fell from the insect's proboscis and plopped in the sand, where it was immediately soaked up. All around the drop of blood, more beetles exploded out of little hills of sand, furiously sweeping the area with their own proboscises and sucking up the blood-covered grains. Crushing the beetle between her fingers, Phasma threw the wet golden-black carcass into the mess of beetles fighting over the drop of blood. The beetles fell upon their fellow, devouring every drop of viscous fluid within until there was nothing left but sparkling shards of exoskeleton. As soon as the moisture was gone, the beetles burrowed back underground, leaving the once smooth sand pebbled with peculiar cone-shaped mounds. Phasma stood.
Gloves stay on, and don't remove them without my say-so. Does it feel infected?
Carr looked at the throbbing red wound and slipped his glove back on with a wry grin.
It feels silly, and a bit embarrassing. To think, I lost a fight with a bug.
Phasma sighed, but no one could be angry with Carr for long.
Be serious for once.
It itches, but I don't feel the fever.
Let me know if you do. General Hux, are you familiar with this creature?
Brendel shrugged.
Not this particular species. Every desert has insects that hunger for moisture. Still, I agree. Better to stay away and avoid giving them what they want.
He was still squinting through the blowing sand, his eyes gone red and puffy. Now that they were on the ground, Phasma was able to pull a length of cloth from her pack and help him wind it around his face, leaving only his watery blue eyes exposed. Gosta stepped forward to offer him a pair of ragged old goggles, which he accepted matter-of-factly. When Siv again held out the pot of oracle salve, he considered it more carefully, but still did not accept the gift. When Brendel was outfitted to withstand the sands, Phasma looked to his troopers and said,
It would be best if we could further stain your armor. The clean parts stand out in this gray desert.
They were already somewhat dingy from their earlier trek, but the troopers must have concurred. One of the soldiers took up a handful of the sand and rubbed it into his armor, where it left a dark gray sheen. Soon all three troopers were staining their armor with help from the Skyr folks, all of whom were careful to keep on their gloves and check every handful of sand for more of the blood beetles. When the white armor and helmets had been more uniformly stained a messy gray, Phasma nodded her approval and began walking. The Skyr folk had already wound up their climbing ropes and removed their boot claws, and they followed their leader into the great unknown.